Inanna's descent into the underworld. This story is 4,000 years old and comes from the ancient civilization of Sumeria. It's about Inanna, goddess of beauty and battle, her dark descent into the underworld, and her extraordinary rebirth. Let me tell you a little bit about Inanna first, as you may not have met her before. They called her the Light Dancer, Queen of Summer, Battle Maiden, she who harvests the hearts of men. She is the burn of desire, the hand which soothes the nightmare-haunted child, the croon of comfort to a fallen warrior, and the flashing arc of steel for those who dare bar her way. Her emblem is an 8-pointed star. Her hair rivers down her back, twined with emeralds and pearls. Her eyes glow like sacrificial fires. And it was said of her that to look upon her face was to lose yourself in the corridors of time itself. Such is Inanna, Queen of Heaven. She was also, in more ordinary terms, a daughter, a mother, a sister and a wife. One day, she was sitting on a riverbank, dangling her toes in the water and surrounded by her ladies. That particular morning, her husband, Demazid, whom to her parents' horror she had plucked from obscurity as a shepherd boy and installed in her bed, had been left behind for the day. Because despite being both adoring and staggeringly good-looking with abs to die for, she did find his conversation could be a teeny bit boring. Suddenly, the sun went dark. Not just behind a cloud, dark. The temperature plummeted. Then came a sound. The sound of a woman crying as if her heart would break. Softly at first, so softly, but getting louder all the time. And it seemed to rise up from the very depths of the earth itself. From the great above, Inanna opened her ears to the great below, and she realized just who it was. Shouting to her ladies to follow her, she sprang to her feet, lifted her silken skirts high, and ran back to the palace. To find her parents standing in the throne room looking shocked, a tear-stained papyrus on the table in front of them. "This has just arrived from your sister, Ereshkigal, Queen of the Underworld. She says that her husband, the Bull of the Underworld, is dead, and that she's about to give birth to their first baby any moment. Our poor darling girl is distraught, and she needs the comfort of her family. She needs us now. But we cannot go to her. Those who enter the underworld do not return." "I am so sorry to hear this," said Inanna. "That is terrible." "And yes, it is true that those who enter the underworld do not come back. But what do you want me to do about it?" Her parents exchanged a sheepish look. "Well, we know that you two have never seen eye to eye. You're so different. Chalk and cheese, thunder and lightning, fire and ice. But we feel that you should be the one to help her, Inanna. You are Queen of Heaven, Empress of Summer. You are also extremely clever and can talk your way out of anything. Don't shake your head, we've heard you. If you went to pay your respects at the Bull's funeral and offer support to your sister, we are confident, well, fairly confident, that she would let you out again afterwards. Fairly confident." Inanna shook her head. But she felt so sorry for Ereshkigal, she prepared herself as if for a state visit after all, as one queen to another. She put on her golden crown. She picked up her rod of power and held it in her right hand. She placed a heavy golden necklace around her neck a dual breastplate across her chest. Her dress was the silk of every colour of the rainbow, and a silk petticoat went beneath it. And on her feet, she wore tiny little shoes with jewelled heels. Her best friend, Ninshibar, came to the door of the underworld with her. She was worried. Inanna, family support is all very well, but what happens if they do not let you go? It's a real risk. Let me come with you. No, said Inanna. No. I tell you what, though. You wait here, by the door of the underworld. Wait for me. Wait for me for 3 days and 3 nights. If I'm not back by then, that means something has gone horribly wrong. And then, yes, I would like you to go and find help. Can you do that for me? Ninshibar nodded. Inanna stepped up to the doorway. It seemed carved from the dark bones of the earth and stood alone in the middle of a towering rock face. Nothing would grow near it. No grasses, no flowers, no trees. It squatted there, huge, heavy and grim, with neither markings nor door handles upon it. We're closed, came an ill-tempered voice. Inanna was astonished. She tried again. I said, we're closed. Not to me, said Inanna, and aimed a kick at the door which split it from top to bottom. A tousled head poked round the edge. My lady, forgive me, but I have instructions from Ereshkigal, the queen of the underworld. She is indisposed, she is distressed, she is not to be disturbed. I cannot let you in, no matter who you are. Inanna was not used to being spoken to like that, and particularly not by scruffy little doormen. She drew herself up to her full height and folded her arms. You go, and you tell my sister that Inanna, Queen of Heaven, is here to pay her respects and to offer her support. I demand to be let in. I demand to be let in now. Go and speak to her and be quick about it. The doorman recoiled, scuttled off, and was back within minutes. It seems that you're permitted entry after all. However, he added, stepping swiftly in front of her to bar her way, your sister has made a few conditions. Oh, she did she? Yeah, she said that if you are going to come into her kingdom, the same rules apply to you as to everybody else. And this means, my lady, that you must enter the kingdom of the underworld naked and bowed down before her. Are you prepared to do so? Naked? Ugh, whatever. That matters not to me. I'm proud of my body, so I couldn't care less who sees it. Let them look. But bowed down? In her dreams. We shall see, replied the doorman. However, to begin the admission process, you must now give me your crown. Inanna shrugged. My crown does not confer my authority. I have that anyway, she said. Here. She handed it over and he took it greedily in his dirty hands. That better be here when I come back. Oh, of course, said the doorman. If you come back. She swept off down the dark corridor, which was dimly lit by little braziers sputtering on the walls, and came to the second gate and knocked on that. Another gatekeeper, possibly even grubbier than the first, looked out and said, yes, I've heard about you. You can pass, but you will have to give me your rod of power. She handed it over with a sigh. That better be here when I come back. Oh, naturally, said the doorkeeper. If you come back. She passed to the third gate, where she had to leave her necklace The fourth, where the gatekeeper demanded her breastplate. The fifth, where the man guarding the door this time requested her dress. The sixth, where yet another gatekeeper asked for her silk petticoat. It left her stark naked except for her little jewelled shoes, but such was her dignity. It made no difference to her one way or the other. I am more than my clothes. I am more than my jewels. I am more than my trappings. I am Inanna, Queen of Heaven, and nothing can bow me down. The final gate took her little jewelled slippers, and she walked into the reception hall to confront her sister, with nothing left but herself and her skin. She looked around. The walls seemed to dissolve into darkness, and the ceiling was so high she couldn't see where it went. Shadowy figures stood nervously around the walls. They were the courtiers of the queen, and they feared to go with her because she was in such a state that she struck out like a cobra at any who dared approach her. Ereshkigal girl herself was sitting on the steps of the throne, crying, tearing her hair, banging her face against the floor. She was a total mess. Her hair was all over the place. She had raked her nails down her face, leaving bloody streaks. There were empty pizza boxes, empty bottles of Jack Daniels, sweet papers, toilet rolls, God knows what, strewn all over the place, with her in the middle of it, rocking to and fro. She cried and she cried, and every so often her body would go rigid and she would double over as the pain of childbirth tore through her. Inanna was appalled. She ran forward, knelt down, and placed her hand upon Ereshkigal's shoulder. Her sister looked up sharply. "What are you doing here?" she hissed. "I let you in, but that doesn't mean I want to see you. I suppose you've come to gloat. You always were the pretty one, the lucky one, the one who all the good things happen to. Well, now my husband is dead, and I am in agony, and I hope you are happy." "Sister, that's not why I'm here at all," said Inanna. "Oh, shut up!" screamed Ereshkigal. And she reared back and slapped Inanna across the face as hard as she could. The blow sent the Queen of Heaven reeling backwards, and she hit her head very hard indeed on the lowest step of the throne. It cracked her head in two. Blood flowed out of it. The wound was so bad that her spirit left her body, and she died. Ereshkigal looked round and screamed with frustration. "Oh, perfect, perfect. Now I've killed my sister as well on top of everything else. Why does all this happen to me? Why am I so unlucky? Why am I so unhappy?" And she began to sob uncontrollably. Two guards edged forward nervously. "My lady." The queen looked up. "Just take her away." "Yes, my lady. What would you like us to do with her?" said the biggest guard, thinking that maybe, you know, Inanna was going to be laid out in state as was proper. "I don't care," said the queen. "I don't care. Hang her on that hook on the wall over there." "What? Just do it." So Inanna's body was hung, without ceremony, on a hook on the wall, while the queen moaned and writhed in childbirth and misery. For 3 days and three nights she hung there. On the third night, her friend Ninshubar, who'd been crouched by the doorway of the underworld all this time, knew that something was very wrong. She ran back to the palace, went to the temple and called out to the god of the earth, saying, "Please, please, send Inanna help." But he would not. "I do not interfere with the workings of the underworld," he said, "and nobody does. I'm sorry, I can do nothing." she ran to Inanna's father, who was also incidentally the god of the moon and remarkably powerful, and knelt down before him. She explained what had happened, but the father shook his head too. "I am sorry. I have now lost two beloved daughters, not one. And I bear responsibility for this, for it was I who asked Inanna to go down there in the first place. But I have no jurisdiction down in the underworld. I can do nothing." Ninshubar gave him a withering look, and then ran out into the garden and stood by the edge of the lake and called out to the god Enki. Now Enki was the god of the waters and the god of wisdom. He had power over the rivers, the lakes, the streams and the seas, and he was also a river to his people. And he came. He listened sympathetically, sighed and said, "I think we're going to have to be a little creative about this one," and started cleaning his fingernails. He got quite a bit of dirt out from under his fingernails and started rolling it into a ball between his palms. And from that ball of earth dirt, he fashioned two little figures. He named them Empathy and Compassion. Then he leaned over them and breathed his very own breath into their lungs. Their eyes flickered open, and he gifted them with a tiny diamond bottle of the water of life. "Go," he said. "You know what to do." The little beings stood up, and led by Ninshubar, they went back to the door of the underworld, hammered on it yet again, and this time were let in immediately by the dishevelled gatekeeper. "Oh, hang on a minute," he said. "What are those?" as the two little beings pushed past him. The living aren't allowed in here, you know that." "They're not, strictly speaking, alive," said Ninshubar. "Well, if they're dead, they should be here anyway." "They're not really dead either. It's a little hard to explain." The doorman hawked and spat over his left shoulder and grabbed his enormous rule book and started looking through all the subclause sections to see if there was anything there whatsoever that covered what you do with beings who want to come in but who are neither living nor dead. And while he was still looking, they'd already arrived at the next gatekeeper's door. He let them in. So did the next one and the next. And within moments, they too were walking into the throne room. They took in the courtiers still cowering around the walls, Irashkiel, a great sobbing mass in the middle of the floor, and Inanna, hanging on the wall. They stepped forwards to the queen, and suddenly she felt a soft hand, a very small hand, on her shoulder. She looked up.
"Who are you?"
she said, so surprised she forgot to be angry.
"Oh, it's happening again. And what are you doing in my kingdom?"
"My lady, we are named Empathy and Compassion," said the first little being. "And we are here to serve you. We can carry the weight of your sorrow, for we have no hearts. We can shoulder the desolation of your soul, because
we don't have spirits.
We will be your comforters and your friends. We will stay with you, and we will never, ever leave you." Compassion leaned forward and wiped the tears from the queen's face and pushed her tangled black hair back from her hot, damp forehead. Empathy knelt down beside her and gave her the most massive hug. The queen stopped crying. "Oh," she said, "thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing me this comfort at the time when I needed it the most. I bless you from the bottom of my heart. If you will stay with me, I will give you anything you ask for, anything in my kingdom. It is yours. Just name it. You can have it." The little men looked at each other and then pointed at Inanna's body. Give us her. Her? Said the Queen. But she's dead. She's rotting. She's going green and everything. Her toes are starting to drop off. You can't possibly want her. We do, said the little man. Believe me, we do. And as for being dead, watch this.
Lift her down.
The guards laid Inanna's corpse at Arashkiel's feet. And indeed, she was going green. Her flesh was putrefying. Her eyes had glazed over, and her body was stiff and cold. The little men were undeterred and merely unstoppered the bottle,
sprinkled droplets,
first on her face, then on her throat, then on her tummy and her legs.
Then the last few little splashes of it they poured through her open mouth.
For a minute, nothing at all happened. Then Inanna coughed. Shivered, opened her eyes. The colour came back into her face. All traces of death just disappeared, as if in the morning mist. Her eyes became clear, and abruptly she sat up. My lady, you are free, said the little beings. You may return. Go now. She scrambled to her feet and looked down at her sister, who unclasped the rich cloak that was around her shoulders with her own hands and held it out and bowed her head. Inanna swept it over her shoulders, turned on her heel and left the room. At the seventh gate, she picked up her shoes, at the sixth her silk petticoat, at the fifth her dress. The fourth gatekeeper handed her her breastplate with a very deep, low bow. The fifth brought her her necklace with respectful hands. The sixth restored her rod, and the final gatekeeper replaced the crown very gently on her head. And she strode out of the underworld and into the morning. As she emerged from the darkness into the brightness of the daylight, Ninshabar, who'd been crouched by the doorway praying, threw herself at her friend. And together they ran back to the palace. The first thing Inanna saw was her children, who were wearing sackcloth and ashes and sitting quietly under a tree. They too ran to their mother and wrapped their arms around her, kissing her again and again and again. Inanna's friends came out from the corridors and the arches, gathered around her in a happy chattering group. They too were all wearing the sackcloth and ashes of respectful mourning. Someone tapped Inanna on the shoulder. Just with one finger. It was a very cold, bony finger. She looked round, and there stood a smoky, shadowy pair of demons, carrying between them a great, heavy, dark, silken net. Just one more little thing, they said. You've left the underworld. So we need a soul to replace yours. It must be someone you hold dear. You have the power to make the choice. But you must send them down today. Otherwise, you're going to be the one in the net. You're going to be the one going back.
So, no pressure or anything. But we'll just wait here. Take your time.
Inanna's heart sank. She looked at all those who loved her. All those who had been mourning her, and knew she could not possibly nominate any of them. It just wasn't going to happen. Then Ninshabar leaned forward and whispered in her ear,
I think you should come to the throne room, Inanna. There's something that you should see.
Inanna marched into the throne room, threw open the door, and there, sitting on her throne, wearing not mourning but a whole load of Versace bling, with an underdressed serving girl perched on his lap feeding him grapes, another one massaging his head, and another one, even more painted and underdressed than the other two, massaging his feet, sat her husband, Dumarset. He looked remarkably cheerful, and he appeared to be swigging tequila from a teacup.
"Darling," he said when he caught sight of Inanna, leaping up and tipping the serving girl off his knees, running towards her. "How wonderful to see you! I'd given up all hope of ever seeing you alive again. How did you escape?"
"Never mind that," said Inanna. "I see you've missed me. Consoling ourselves, are we? Cheering ourselves up, are we? In mourning, are we?" "Dumarset, I am deeply, deeply disappointed in you." He opened his mouth to argue and to explain. I mean, what was there to explain? She ignored him and merely looked over her shoulder. "Demons, take him." And so they did, wrapped up in the silken net, begging, shouting, swearing, crying, screaming, they dragged Dumarset down into the underworld. Some might say that that was kind of fair enough for a husband with a very short attention span, who may never have loved his wife that much in the first place. Others say that a little compassion is never misplaced. In fact, his sister and his mother cried so hard and for so long that Inanna took pity on them, and she allowed his sister to spend 6 months in the underworld every year. When she was there, Dumarset could return. When he was in the upper world, beautiful things did happen. The sun shone more, the crops swelled, the flowers bloomed. And when he left, it was cold, and the days were shorter and colder. And thus the seasons of summer and winter came to Samaria. The rhythm they provided helped bring stability to the country, and Inanna ruled gloriously and well when her parents retired, for the keys of the kingdom passed into her care. Indeed, some say she rules there still. So call upon Lady Inanna when you too are stripped of everything you own, and must survive with only your skin and yourself. Call upon her for female ferocity, she-courage and righteous rage. And call upon her for the taking back of that which is yours. Luceat lumen similis est. Shine bright like the star.